We'll start open lines next hour, but when we come back in a moment, we'll take your calls with Mr. Lobo on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Mr. Lobo with us. You'll get a kick out of this, Mr. Lobo. Last Saturday, I ran right into Russell Crowe. He was going into a restaurant I was leaving from, and I looked at him and went, "Love your work." And he went, "You're the ancient alien guy." Anyways, he wants to come on the show sometime in September.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's great.
He's gained a lot of weight. He played the part of Roger Ailes, the late Fox News manager. And he's on a Showtime series. It's, I think it's seven parts. It's called The Loudest Voice. And in order to look like Ailes, man, not only did he go through the the costuming that they went through, but he put on a lot of weight for the part.
You know, he was kind of heavy when he was speaking. It's weird. We just mentioned Dr. Jekyll, but he played Dr. Jekyll in that Mummy movie from a few years ago.
Yeah. Great actor.
So he is a great actor.
I loved him in The Gladiator, The Cinderella Man.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great movie.
All that stuff.
Ridley Scott, who directed Alien, made Gladiator.
We're going to take calls with Mr. Lobo. What has been your favorite all-time horror movie ever?
That's so. That's like picking a favorite child.
I know you can. You love them all. You love them differently sometimes, but you love them all.
I have different moods, you know. I mean, sometimes I feel like Plan 9 from Outer Space. Sometimes I like The Invisible Man. Sometimes it's Son of Frankenstein. Sometimes it's Alien. You know, if there's just too many.
What are your first couple that you like?
Well, a lot of those that I mentioned probably just now, but I think Son of Frankenstein is a great one. I think Invisible Man, I mean, those ones are probably ones I keep coming back to. There's a few of the weirder ones like The Brain That Wouldn't Die and Plan 9 from Outer Space where they're really just low budget B movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I always find whenever they're on, I just compelled to watch them over and over and over.
Did you like the black and white ones more though than the color ones?
I like black and white movies a lot.
Me too.
I enjoy black and white movies. I think there's something happens magically. There's an abstraction there. But I like modern horrors too. I think Return of the Living Dead is a great movie. But I think black and white, there's something special, especially that it's got that 3 a.m. feeling, and I like that feeling when you're watching something in black and white.
I think Hitchcock was a better director with black and white.
Absolutely. I don't think Psycho, I mean, I guess the Gus Van Sant version proves that, but I don't think Psycho would have worked as well in color. I think that there is something that happens in black and white. That abstraction creates something magical.
Same with Twilight Zone. When they went from that to Night Gallery, which went from black and white to color, there was a difference feeling, too.
Oh, yeah, different in tone, yeah. Well, and Rod Serling didn't write a lot of the Night Gallery ones, you know. I think they didn't want more moral tales in the 70s. They wanted amoral tales in the 70s. But, I think Twilight Zone in black and white, I think the Twilight Zone's much better in black and white. It becomes part of the mood of it. And I think your imagination, you know, you get to bring something to that. And I think that there's a stronger connection there when, you know, your brain, it's like you're reading it, you know, you're looking at that abstraction and that you're filling in the rest of the picture with your own experience. And I think that's why people who can tune into black and white movies, and sadly a lot of millennials cannot watch a black and white movie. I think people who can tune into a black and white movie, it's a much stronger kind of intellectual kind of experience.
Let's go to Harry in Brooklyn, New York, first-time caller to get us started. Hello, Harry. Good morning.
Hello, George. It's great to speak with you again. Hello, Mr. Lobo. How are you?
Greetings. How are you, sir?
Okay. You guys are bringing back so many memories for me with all the Saturday, you know, afternoon, Sunday afternoon matinees with all the horror movies. I was wondering if you guys remember the gentleman. I would say he was probably the most popular horror matinee movie host ever. In fact, he used to dress up like, if I recall, because I'm going back maybe 58 years, but he used to dress up. He was very popular with us kids, and he used to dress up. I think, if I remember, it was like the Phantom of the Opera. You remember who it was?
What location, too?
Yeah, what area are you from, sir?
Well, he's in Brooklyn, New York.
But it has to be Zachary. I think it would probably be Zachary.
You got it.
Tell us about him, Mr. Logwell.
John Zachary, well, he started in the Philly area, and he did a character called Roland, which spun off he did an Undertaker character on the Daily Western soap opera. He had this Undertaker character, and it was so popular that they had him host the movies, and he was probably one of the very first horror movie hosts outside of Vampira in L.A. He had this very strange demeanor. He had his hair parted in the middle and dark sunken cheeks and dark around the eyes, and he wore like a frock coat, and he talked to my dear, who was his wife, who I don't know if she was dead or alive, but she was in a sack on the set somewhere, and he talked to her, and he would do anatomies of amoebas made out of jello, and he was a fantastic horror movie host, and he was a lifer. I mean, even after his show was over, he did conventions. He was a chiller convention. He was 93 years old. He was still doing
conventions. Isn't that amazing? That keeps you young.
People loved him.
It's something else. We've got to touch base with Morgus again. I haven't talked to him in a couple of years.
I mean, how old would he be now?
Gosh, that's an interesting question. He's got to be in his mid-80s. Easy.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, the last time I heard him was maybe around 2012 or something on your show, and he sounded as robust and as funny as
that. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sid Noel is his real name, and he's down in New Orleans.
I was on in Louisiana, and I got so many wonderful stories from the fans about Morgus, because that was his territory, you know, and they basically said, oh, you're doing a Morgus.
Well, he was wholesome, and, you know, as a scientist, every experiment that he conducted, he screwed up.
Oh, absolutely. You know, wholesome, but there was always a little bit of subversion. You know?
Yeah, sure.
That's what kept it interesting.
I had a clip that we play every once in a while where he wanted me to, he put up a force field around him scientifically, and he told me nothing could get through and to punch him in the face.
Right.
And I said, Morgus, he was here too, he was here in the studio, and I said, Morgus, I'm not going to punch you. He said, George, trust me. And I just smacked him right in the face, and his tooth fell out.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable. Next up, let's go to Thomas.
Man.
Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hi, Tom.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. And Mr. Lobo, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Oh, wonderful to hear your voice, too, sir.
Thank you. You know, the 1950s just produced some great science fiction horror movies.
Most of them were directed by Jack Arnold.
Yeah. I think of movies like The Tingler and The Crawling Eye.
Oh, yeah. Those are some great ones.
Yeah, Forbidden Planet. But the movie I was going to ask you about and the director.
We're showing Forbidden Planet at Blobfest. What? Oh, was that?
Oh, say that again?
Oh, we're showing Forbidden Planet at Blobfest, which is an event that I do every year.
Really? Yeah, Walter Pigeon. I mean, it's just a great movie. And Robbie the Robot. You know, it's in that movie.
Robbie the Robot. If you watch that movie very closely, Robbie cannot sit down. So at the very end of that movie, he's got, like, cardboard legs when he's sitting at the control panel.
Oh, boy. Yeah. But the movie I wanted to ask about, and the director, is Robert Wise, who
The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Day the Earth Stood Still.
The original one, right?
Yeah, the original one with Michael Rennie.
Yep.
And just a perfect film, black and white, you know. And
oh yeah, absolutely. And such a great message, you know. The aliens weren't here to destroy us; they were here to help save us from ourselves.
Right. And it incorporated a lot of themes too that were way ahead of their time. The idea that you know, artificial intelligence with the robot Gort,
mm-hmm.
and
Gort, yes.
the spacecraft itself had. You know, a computer system and et cetera. But the acting was just superb. Robert Wise went on to make, of course, The Sound of Music, but he also made the first Star Trek movie,
yes.
and Andromeda Strain, you know, biological horror. But
yes.
I really liked The Day the Earth Stood Still, 1951. I just felt...
That's one of the greatest films of all time, of any genre, in my opinion. Yeah, Day the Earth Stood Still. Now I'm going to have to put that on my list.
Absolutely.
Go back and watch that.
That's my favorite movie of the hour now.
Thanks, Tom. and what did Rennie say? What did the alien say? Was his name was Klaatu, wasn't it?
Yeah, Klaatu Barada Nikto was the words that you had to say to Gort to
the robot
to board the ship. Yes, which was later picked up by the Evil Dead. They made that the magic words of the Necronomicon. They pulled it right out of it. Was directly referencing Day the Earth Stood Still and the Evil Dead with the Necronomicon, the words that you say to the Necronomicon.
We have Julia in La Puente, California. Welcome to the program, Julia. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
You know, I grew up on horror movies. I actually grew up in a haunted house. However, the one movie that really scared me was a movie that people rarely speak of, and it's called The Entity, about a haunted house in Whittier.
I saw that in the theater, The Entity. That's a very genuinely scary movie.
Yes, it is. I can't remember the actors, but I just find it fascinating that not too many people know of it.
You know, it didn't have a robust, you know, it came out before home video really took hold, and I think it...
Is this the 1982 movie?
I'm not sure. I was thinking maybe late 70s, early 80s.
I think it is 82.
That was with Ron Silver, Barbara Hershey.
Barbara Hershey, exactly. Yes.
Yes. And it was based on a true story. And she, at the very end of the movie, they just say that it continues to follow her, that there's no real conclusion to it.
No, there isn't.
It makes it scarier. It's like the birds. We don't really know why it happens, and there isn't a real conclusion. And I think that leaving it open-ended is so much more terrifying.
And supposedly it's still going on.
Wow.
Wow, could be.
What a thing to live with.
Thanks,
to be possessed.
Ed Wood, tell us a little bit about him, Mr. Wood.
Oh, I love talking about Ed Wood. Ed Wood, of course, I think met his greatest fame when the Golden Turkey Awards announced him as the worst director of all time. But, of course, he directed Plan 9 from Outer Space. And they made Tim Burton made a film about Ed Wood, which won a couple Academy Awards. At least Martin Landau did for his portrayal of Bela Lugosi. But Ed Wood was a low-budget filmmaker. He was famously an alcoholic and a cross-dresser, and you know, it's surprising that he was able to make, you know, five feature films, but he somehow did. He had so much enthusiasm, and but a lot of the things that we think about with him are the cheap model flying saucers on strings and the sets made out of cardboard and the knocking over the tombstone and no continuity between day and night. A lot of those things that we think of in B-movies, he really did all of those things in his movies.
Do you know the name Judson Fountain?
Judson Fountain? Not off the tip of my tongue.
He was called the radio Ed Wood of drama.
Oh, really?
And he would do strange and weird things. He was born back in 1934. He got into radio and he just started doing low budget productions but they called him the Ed Wood of radio drama.
Ed Wood of radio. Yeah. Well, Ed Wood was, you know, I think he was a Guinness Book award winning typist. He could write a screenplay in 2 days and he ghost wrote a lot of things for people. And I think he thought if he directed the movies himself, he could keep a lot more of the money. You know, he'd make $400 on a project and then the director would make $4,000, you know. So I think he thought he could make more money if he did it all himself. But I think he just spread himself too thin.
On the scripts that he wrote, Rod Serling would dictate the scripts into a dictaphone machine in those days.
Oh, I know.
And then his secretary would transcribe it.
Can you imagine just be able to just tell a story into a tape recorder and then have your secretary make a script out of it? That guy was a genius.
Oh, my God, yeah. Mark Zucre, who's written a book about the Twilight Zone and knows Carol Serling quite well, the wife, found in the attic of their house old Twilight Zone scripts that had not been produced.
I would love to take a peek at those.
Next up, we've got Mavis in Seattle, west of the Rockies. Hi, Mavis. Go ahead.
Good evening.
Hi.
And I love your program, and I will tell you my scariest movie that I ever saw.
All right.
And I was probably 13 years old, and it was in the summertime, and it was called The Haunting. And I was sitting in the house, and my dad and mom were over next door, and then when that, I don't know if you ever saw the movie, but there would be beating on the house, and my dad came up and beat on the window.
And
let's just say that it scared the daylights out of me.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. Wow. Yeah, the Haunting is terrifying. When they remade it too in the in '99, but the 1963 version is far superior, for sure.
Black and white. But then they found that woman in the attic, and I thought, oh no, way, man. But this is what I called about. Remember Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop?
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
sure do.
Okay, well, she died. And do you know who her mother-in-law was?
I do not, no.
Judith Krantz, and she just died. She was 91. She wrote Scruples and Princess Daisy.
Jeez.
And I...
Wow, interesting.
I know, but she was quite a lady.
Yeah.
So... anyway, but and I'm not going to be watching The Haunting ever again. And I'm 78 years old, and I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. You know, some of those ones you never forgive. They scare you so bad that you can't watch them again. I know I host The Blob every year, and there's always that one guy who's like, I'm not going in the theater. It scared me bad when I was a kid, and I still can't watch The Blob. It's like, okay, you're an adult now. You could probably handle it. No, I'm never seeing The Blob again.
In 1993, Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop were invited to go to Larry King's birthday party.
Wow.
She was one of the headlines.
I mean, she did that character forever, it seems. I mean, she was
puppets. Puppets were
always
big things, Mr. Lobo, in those days,
puppets
weren't they?
Puppets are magical. Again, it's that abstraction. You kind of fill in the reality of it. You know, you make it alive with... It's a magic trick, you know. You bring life to it with your own experience, and it becomes something real. I mean, when I saw Yoda in The Empire Strikes Back, he was real. He didn't seem like a puppet. He seemed real to me.
Absolutely. Let's take another quick call, then we'll take a break and come back with more. Paul in Boston, take it away, Paul.
Oh, George, well, you always have a great show.
Well, we better.
Phineas, Dr. Fibes. That was the
last film
Vincent Price made.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too bad they didn't make a third one.
I know. There was
what happened after he got over when he went up the river?
Yes. There's Dr. Fibes, and then Dr. Fibes Rises Again, and then, yeah.
And that was it for him.
They could have kept going with those. It was such a great character. And I think the precursor to films like Saw, you know, because it was basically him creating these elaborate deaths for people.
That's a weird movie.
Yeah.
How many Saw movies are there? A couple of them?
At least five.
Five of them? Wow.
I tuned out after a certain point. I checked out. But, yeah, at least five.
Who's the actor? He was weird.
Yeah.
Good actor, but weird.
I wasn't really too big on the Saw movies, and I can't pull his name out right now. But, yes, you know.
I stumbled across one of them one night.
This one's okay.
On, like, Showtime or HBO, and I'm saying these are the strangest, weirdest movies I have ever seen. You know the other ones that are weird that are coming out now using internet technology? Those movies where some person is hooked up to a system, and the more people online that view it, the worse the pain of the death for the guy.
Oh, wow. I've never heard of
that. Oh, yeah. Those are it's a strange series of movies. Anyways, we'll be back with more calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our final segment with Mr. Lobo and your phone calls. Mr. Lobo, Tobin Bell was the actor in Saw.
Oh, okay.
He played the role of Jigsaw and John, I guess.
Jigsaw, yes.
Strange.
Of course.
Strange looking. I mean, he's got great parts. He's, you know, he's getting movies up and down like crazy, but you get typecasted like that.
Maybe
don't you?
He will be the next great horror actor.
He may already be.
May already be, yes.
So what's going on with
for a certain generation, for sure.
What's going on with Blogfest?
Blobfest, oh my gosh, it is the 20th anniversary of the fest. So last year was the 60th anniversary of the film, which was a huge show, but now it's our 20th anniversary of the festival. It takes place in Phoenixville, which is the area, Coatesville and Phoenixville and surrounding areas where they filmed the movie The Blob. And then, of course, the Colonial Theater is featured in the film. That's when the blob gets loose in the theater, and we all run out of the theater. And we recreate that run out on the Friday night as the opening ceremony. So 300 people get up and run out the front doors out into the street to escape the blob. And then we're doing double features all day long. Wes Schenck, who was the curator of the original Blob, Silicone, he passed away last year, and in his honor, he also owned a bunch of Forbidden Planet props, and so that was his favorite movie, was Forbidden Planet. So in honor of Wes this year, we're presenting The Blob with a double feature with Forbidden Planet, and then for the late night show, we're doing Teenagers from Space. And we're doing a spook show with Daughter of Horror, where we're going to have ghosts roaming the audience and all kinds of gimmicks, unregistered nurses in attendance. And on Sunday, we have a new effort from the creators of Lost Skeleton of Cadavera, which is a more modern, like a retro-styled B-movie. We have the producer of that film on Sunday, and we're doing Q&A and showing The Blob again. So, yeah, just a lot of fun. And it's just classic cars, 50s cars out on the street, you know, the fire truck from The Blob, you know, rockabilly, 50s music. It's just a great family event, and I just every year I just love it more and more.
An old listener to my Nighthawk show in St. Louis, Jeff in Ferguson with us. Hey, Jeffrey, how are you?
Oh, long time no talk.
You're out there. I know you are.
Oh, yeah. I got a couple. My first movie was not horror, but it was sci-fi. Star Trek V.
Star Trek V. Wow, what a one to start with.
Yeah, I remember specifically because the theater was handing out a free Star Trek comic that day at the theater. So.
Classic.
Also,
so that's the one where we meet Spock's brother, right?
Yeah. Yes, that's the one.
Yeah.
I also got a couple of quick questions, if I can.
Sure.
Has your guest heard of a horror host program called Horror Hotel?
Horror Hotel.
A horror host program called Horror Hotel. Is the host like Lamia or Lamia?
Yeah, that's her.
That's it.
Yeah, I've seen her. I she seems charming. I've never seen her program, but
yeah, I got hooked on that program a year or two ago when it came on retro TV.
To a convention too, I believe. I think they have a Horror Hotel convention in that area.
And
what area is that that you're from?
Ferguson, Missouri.
He's in Missouri.
Ferguson, Missouri. Okay, so yes, she's Missouri. Okay.
Yeah.
What else, Jeff?
I've read that Vincent Price lived in Ferguson, Missouri at one point.
He did.
Confirm that?
That's true.
Yes.
I can confirm
that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did he live there, or was he born there, or just...
He was born in St. Louis, and he may have had a house in Ferguson for a short time.
Yeah, I was just curious about that, because I've heard rumors, and I was never able to confirm that.
That's what I hear, too.
Yeah, I've heard
Thanks,
that,
Jeffrey.
I have his cookbook. I know that he has a lot of great recipes.
When I started doing talk radio in St. Louis, I was the Nighthawk, doing my own place, and Jeff was one of our regular listeners out there.
Oh, wow, so he goes way back.
Way back to the beginning,
Excellent.
Back. Let's go to Joe, Long Island, New York, east of the Rockies. Joey.
Hey, Mr. Lobo, I got a movie and a scene from another movie. The movie Soylent Green, this dystopian movie, society can't make it without resorting to making people over 30 Soylent Green. And now that movie was set in the year 2022. So we got the new Green Deal. So it's coming. I made an exception.
We're going to be eating people.
Wafers.
Mm-hmm, delicious.
Yeah, And the scene, this is an obscure movie to most people, but yes. Operation Crossbow, I saw on Netflix, really, to see Sophia Loren. I tried to find any.
Operation Crossbow, I'm intrigued. Tell me about it.
Yeah. It kind of shows how the Germans were developing the V-1 rocket, and it has scenes. In other words, the idea, one overarching idea is, like, World War II, towards the end, nobody knew what someone might come up with. You know, that idea of, like, the technology at the beginning of the war wasn't going to be necessarily the same at the end.
Right.
But the scene I would refer to, you got to see the scene. They did this where they were lobbing bombs into the London, and they're coming at a low level and slow, like rockets, basically.
Right.
And a guy's delivering the mail, and the bomb just explodes right in front of him. And all the war movies I've ever seen, I never got the concept of mutually assured destruction mad.
Yeah.
Then more so than from that scene, I just said, this is the beginning of the end. If someone's delivering mail and you have these slow-moving rockets coming in, it's going to escalate to mutually assured destruction. So if you ever see that scene, it was really unique.
Yeah, Operation Crossbow.
Right.
Sophia Loren. I'll put it on my list.
I love it. Don't you love these movies? And they just keep coming.
And you know, it's people always go, you never heard of that? And it's like, there's so many movies, you can't possibly know them all. And that's the intriguing part, is that it's just impossible to see them all. So you just have to enjoy the ones that come your way.
And you know what's interesting? They were low-budget movies that if they hit, they made a small fortune for them at that time.
That's the way to do it. You know, they'd make these movies for $60,000 and then they'd make millions. I mean, that's a smart way to do it.
Rather than Cleopatra.
Yeah. Or these movies now where, you know, they've got $400 million budgets. If they don't make $200 million their first weekend, they're sunk.
My gosh. And people are still hitting the movie houses, aren't they?
They are, you know, and there's all these kind of interesting, you know, these new theaters where they've got, like, kind of gourmet food and the reclining chairs, and they're doing live boxing events, and, you know, they're doing everything to keep people in the cinemas, and I think it's working. I mean, the last few times I've gone to the movie theaters, they've been full.
What's great, though, is being in the comfort of wherever you live, watching something, a movie on whether it's Netflix or Amazon or Showtime or wherever you can see a movie, even if you have to do a pay-per-view, in the comfort of your home. That is so convenient, isn't
it? It is convenient, but it's a different experience. You know, sometimes I
watch
a movie with a bunch of people, especially if I want to feel what the audience is feeling. But you know, horror movies work great by yourself. You know, if you're at home alone and you've got your hot cocoa and the lights are off and you're by yourself and you don't know what's at the front door or the back door, that is a singular experience, and you can definitely creep yourself out at home.
Let's go to Steve in North Carolina. Welcome to the program. Hi, Steve. Good to have you with us.
Y'all set me up. You set me up perfectly, George.
Already.
I appreciate it. I came home back in the 90s. I can't remember which year. And I had been out, you know, on the town. And I come home, and at 12 o'clock, I cut the TV on. And this was network TV. And a movie come on that caught my attention so strongly. I grew up, I'm 60 years old. I grew up watching all the Frankenstein monsters and you know, the square heads and the tubes coming out of the side of the head. Sure. It was a movie, and I'm going to ask you to guess what the name of the movie was, because I do not know.
I'll do my best.
But it starred Robert De Niro.
Yes.
As the monster.
Okay. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, probably. If it was,
you
if
think
it was
that
the
was
Frankenstein
it?
Movie with Robert De Niro, that was Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which I believe came out right after Bram Stoker's Dracula in the 90s.
That could have been it. Okay, Stephen, good luck. Remember the horror models, plastic models that you could get?
Yes, the Aurora
monster models. I had them all, and I wish I still had them.
The mummy and the werewolf and Frankenstein, and many of them had glow-in-the-dark variations, too.
And you'd, like, put them together. You had to glue them together, right?
Yep. So, yeah, I believe so. Yeah, you had to glue them together, and you'd paint them with those awful model paints, and I enjoyed them. I had the Godzilla one. You know, they were cool.
I had them all. I wish I had them.
They're worth a fortune. Maybe
they are.
$85-$90 a piece, easy.
Do they even make them anymore?
They have reissues. Every once in a while, they do a reissue. Somebody gets the rights and puts them out. And I believe they did. I want to say 5 or 6 years ago, somebody put some of those reissued some of those kits.
I just also wish I kept my old baseball cards. I think my mom gave them away.
I'm glad your mom gave them away, because that's why they're worth money. If everyone's mom didn't throw them all away, they wouldn't be worth anything.
I mean, I had them.
All the comic books and all the action figures, they're worth money today because everyone's moms threw them out. Now everyone saves everything and nothing's worth anything.
I had every Superman comic of those days.
Oh, wow.
Every one. I would have baseball cards I had from the mid-50s. I started collecting them. My sister used to get so upset with me.
You could have bought yourself a house with those Superman comics, for sure.
My sister said, all you used to do, George, was take your baseball cards and pack them together like that, hitting them all the time, driving me crazy.
And, did you ever put them in your spokes?
Yes, my doubles I would put in the spokes with a clothesline.
That's awesome.
Clip it on, and
of course, you get that action.
That's right. That's for a lot of people who don't know what that is, you would then pedal your bicycle away with your baseball card flapping on the spokes, and it would make that noise.
Yep.
Why did we do that?
Because it was fun, you know, and I think we wanted to imagine we were on a motorbike, right?
Do kids do that now?
I haven't seen it. I don't know if they're putting their Pokemon cards in their bikes. I don't know if they know what a clothespin is. But you never know. You never know.
If I knew what I knew today about baseball cards, I would have bought boxes of those Topps cards, T-O-P-P-S, right?
Yes.
And just never even opened them.
They trademarked the bubble gum in the cards. Nobody else can do that. That's exclusively Topps thing, the bubble gum in the cards.
What about Cracker Jacks? Are they still doing their thing?
I haven't seen any in 10 years, but I know that they, you know, I think 10 years ago I was seeing them around, and I know they would have the prizes and everything, but I haven't seen them recently. So
they used to have great prizes in there. I'm told they don't have great prizes anymore. They have like
the
little pieces of paper.
The last time I saw them, which was about 10 years ago, they had a lot of the rub on tattoos and stickers.
Stickers, exactly.
They didn't have like the cool
little toys
or the little, you know, plastic things.
Plastic whistles and things like that.
Plastic whistle, exactly. Nothing that good.
We're going to have open lines next hour with Mr. Lobo right now. Let's go to Corey in Lubbock, Texas, home of Buddy Holly. Hey, Corey, go ahead. Got a couple minutes for you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I've been a long-time listener, about 15 years. First time I ever listened to you was overnight, working security, Halloween night.
Ooh.
Ghost to ghost.
And, it was great. Three films right quick. My favorite of all time, the original Halloween, John Carpenter.
Absolutely.
Still, to this day, gives me creeps.
Classic.
The second one is... It was kind of a Christine version, but it was called The Car.
The Car. Yeah, I believe it was a made-for-TV movie originally, but I'm not certain on that. But The Car was great.
And then the last movie, I cannot remember the name. It's an Australian-based film. It was about a school, and the school marm was taken over by a terrorist or something along those lines. It turned into a bloody massacre. The kids had to get away from the school. They get into the mountains. They had to... You know, protect themselves, and ended up taking back over the school and killing all. But all the scared me the most about that film was the guys that were taking over the school wore like Father Christmas masks, the Easter Bunny,
oh wow,
elves and gnomes and stuff like that.
Creepy. I don't know that one.
It's an Australian based film. I cannot remember the name to save my life. But man, I tell you what, that still gives me the creeps. Just thinking about being in school and being taken over like that and creepy mask. It was.
And the Aussie, things. The Aussie films were pretty good. They even, you know, the Mel Gibson songs, movies,
like
rather.
Mad Max and Road Warrior.
They were all classics.
Yeah, I enjoyed those a lot.
Super. Mr. Lobo, we're out of time. You keep in touch with us. It's going by quickly. Give out your website.
Yes, cinemainsomnia.com. And if you're still interested, if you're interested in Blobfest, go to thecolonialtheater.com. And you know, maybe we'll see you next weekend at Blobfest.
Super. Mr. Lobo's with us. Up next, open lines. And if you have been involved in this most recent earthquake in Southern California, definitely check in with us.